This is episode 333, half the devil's number, episode of Ninja News Japan. Because we do about 50 episodes a year, once a week. I don't do every single week because there's holidays and stuff. I will take a week off here and there. But anyone who's been around for the last couple weeks or last couple months or the last couple years, of course, thank you for hanging out and listening to Ninja News Japan and news from Japan and my musings on being a resident of Japan and living in the world. And I hope it's brought you some entertainment more than anything else. Let's get to our news. First story is kind of depressing. Japan has dropped to 92nd place of 116 countries in English proficiency. So the overall level of English ability of the Japanese people has gone down. It's the lowest on record. Last year they were 87, so they've gone from 87 to 92nd place. The drop has been between 18 to 25-year-olds, lower than the overall average compared to people who are 26 and above. So people who are 26 and above, the average ability in their English proficiency is higher. People 18 to 25, they are below average. The government's trying to make excuses, I guess. I don't know. You've got to come up with a reason for this. Why are these students particularly low? They're saying these students kind of lived through coronavirus and has affected their motivation, so they are less motivated to study, so they don't study as hard, so they didn't really achieve the proficiency that they would want. It's interesting because someone, a representative, said that Japan hasn't actually dropped. They've just stayed the same while all the other countries went up. So really, they've maintained their standard, but other countries have improved their English proficiency, forcing Japan down, which is an interesting way of looking at it, because I actually wouldn't have thought of that. We look at lists, we look at numbers, we look at things that go up and down. You think of them as just being relative, who's done more, who's done less. If you maintain the same and everyone else advances, you actually drop in your ranking, so that's pretty interesting. If you're interested in who is number one, the Netherlands. 6 years in a row, the Netherlands has been number one in English proficiency, beating out... I was about to say beating out America, but unfortunately that might actually be true. I don't know what kind of test. The test they administer there is not going to be the same test they would administer in America, but it would be interesting if you gave English-speaking countries like Canada, Australia, New Zealand, England, and America the same test to see where they ranked in English proficiency. I would actually be very interested in those results. I would like to take this test. I have taken multiple English proficiency tests that students of mine have taken just to see how I do. And it's not always perfect. I mean, I do well. Let's give me some credit. I do well, but I am like Japan. I don't think I'm improving my English skills. I think I'm maintaining. So if someone else is improving, they would surpass me. So that's very possible. And I hope that for you. The highest ranked Asian country, which is what Japan would be more likely to be measured against, is Singapore. They got number three. So Netherlands, number one. The highest ranked Asian country is Singapore at number three. So since we're talking about rankings, I thought, wouldn't it be nice to have a counter ranking where Japan has improved? Well, Japan rises to 31st place in global digital competitiveness. What does that mean? I'm not 100% sure. There are 67 countries that get ranked. And you might be like, wow, that's great. 31 out of 67. It's an improvement of one from last year. So the ranking assesses the adoption and utilization of digital technologies that drive transformations in government, business models, and society. So Japan recently gave up floppy disks. They recently have tried to push things onto digital, which should have been digital 10 years ago. So I see Japan's technology push as catching up more than anything else. This is published by the Swiss Business School. The ranking is based on statistical data and surveys of executives. So this is based a lot on, I would say, an older generation of people. Executives do tend to be older people. Singapore claimed the top spot this year, with South Korea, Hong Kong, Taiwan, and Nordic countries such as Denmark, Sweden, and Norway all ranking within the top 10. Japan remained 31st. Although Japan was recognized for its robust technological frameworks and high standards of higher education, it ranked poorly in areas such as business agility and international experience among senior executives, where it placed at the bottom. So an interesting thing of what they're saying is, like, Japan, they're teaching people well, their infrastructure is good, their education is good, but the people who are actually using it, implementing it, the executives, the current executives in Japan now, are horrendous. The ranking at the bottom is bad. Business agility. Japan is not an agile business environment. That is something I have not worked in a bunch of Japanese companies, but I've seen a lot of these stories. I've looked at Japanese companies and things like that. Japan's traditional way of thinking is not agile in its ability to pivot, in ability to change. They do things the way things have been done before because that's the way it's been done before, so that's the right way to do it. That is kind of the base philosophy of most Japanese companies and people. It is this utmost respect for tradition and history, which is respectable in some aspects of life, but then you turn around and go, maybe not everything? And the second point, the international experience among executives, yeah, Japan is very insular. They don't travel outside their country. They don't interact with other cultures. They don't do a very good job of existing on the world stage. And that is actually something I think the next generation of people going up in Japan, that's where they need to look at. Don't look at just Japan as your market. Look at the world as your market. What can you do to achieve that? And that would actually change the nature of Japanese business. It would get you up in this ranking. I don't give a shit about rankings, if I'm being really honest, but rankings do give you insight into sort of comparative data, and that comparative data can tell you where you're weak, and then you can start to improve yourself if anyone took this seriously. This is where I was going to do the quiz, but I didn't manage to arrange someone this week. And episode 333 is, I think, might be the baseline for how we move forward. This is, since I'm just did a story where I'm talking about, like, look at where you need to improve, this is what I need to do with this episode, is how, where are the failures in this episode? How do I need to improve? I need to figure out a way to get the guest on more efficiently. It means I have to do the guest segment earlier than the actual recording of the episode. I can't have people sitting in the wings. I got to work on other people's schedules. But this is where I was going to do the quiz. So I thought, here's the quiz that I wrote that I didn't actually get to do. So I'll just put it out there and then I'll answer the question. Maybe I need to come up with a little thinking song. A 65-year-old man came to Japan with his family. The problem is this very small story got massive push on the news sites or that talk about Japan news. This came up like 8-9 times. It's one of those classic stories. It's fairly inconsequential, but it's got that kind of like flavor that everyone enjoys. It's got that little bit of like, the little ingenue, the little je ne sais quoi that everyone loves in their news stories. Because it doesn't hurt anyone too bad, but a guy gets kind of taken down for who he is. My first assumption was anyone in Japan would have heard this story if you pay attention to the news at all. What crime does he commit? So a 65-year-old man came to Japan with his family. What crime does he commit basically on his first day walking around the city? I gave four options. Number one, he sexually assaults a woman at a bar. Number two, he got drunk and got into a fight. Number three, he commits a form of vandalism. Number four, riding a bike drunk and on his phone. As you learned in last week's episode, riding your bicycle drunk is now illegal in Japan. Riding your bike on while using your phone is illegal in Japan. Doing the both accumulates those, takes those two crimes and puts them together and gives you an extra big fine and possible prison time. So then we would have the discussion now. Ask me some questions. All these four choices are pretty standard stories of foreign people coming to Japan and getting in trouble. The last one's the most interesting one. That was kind of my what I put in there to make it the most interesting one, because it applies to a new rule that was just implemented in the last couple weeks. The actual answer is number three, vandalism. He used his fingernails to carve his family members' names into a torii gate, which is okay. If you're going to vandalize stuff, I'm going to stop for a second. I need a second camera so I can turn to the camera and actually talk to the criminals in the audience. If you're going to commit vandalism, we turn to camera three. I don't have three cameras. I have one. But we turn to the second camera and we say, hey, criminals, if you're going to commit vandalism, don't write your actual names in it, because then your names will be connected to the actual crime, which will be connected to you, giving the police a very easy job of figuring out who committed the crime. Here's a little story. I once committed vandalism. It was in university. I didn't get housing my first year of university, which was a very weird problem to have. The fraternities offered housing. So you could stay in their fraternity house and pay rent. It was very low. But you didn't actually have to join the fraternity. So for almost 10 months, I lived in a fraternity house without being a member of the fraternity. That was a very weird experience. Anyone else who was in a similar situation to mine ended up joining the fraternity. I was the only one who didn't actually join. They had a balcony and it was all wood and it was very old. And I was just playing with my thumb, just like this man carved in with his finger. He carved his name in. I didn't carve in my name. I carved in Fuzzy Zellweger, which was a very old golfing famous person. I don't know anything about golf, so I don't know why that name came to mind, but I knew immediately if I carved in my name, then the crime I have just committed is immediately linked to me, and it's kind of self-evident who committed this crime, and I'm caught. So you don't carve in your own name. So to this man, you've committed the first crime here was actually how stupid you were in committing the crime. That should be an addition to the crime you've committed. So he used his fingernail. He carved in family members' names. I don't know if it was just initials, but he was caught pretty quickly. Tory gates are sacred. So we had a story a few weeks ago, maybe a couple months ago, of a fitness influencer came and did chin-ups on the Tory gate and got like just blasted online. This is worse than that because you've actually done physical damage to the Tory gate. They're not taking that shit lightly. The vandalism was found at 11:20 a.m., at 4:30 a.m. that night, so over the course of a single day, the police went, found this guy, went to his wherever he was staying, his hotel, and arrested him at 4:30 in the morning. They did not hesitate to arrest this guy. He had to do the perp walk from the hotel to the car at 4:30 in the morning. All the pictures of him with like a fuzzy hair, and he's just got like bedhead and stuff because he just woke him up, said, throw on some clothes, you're under arrest. We haven't got any information since then of what's actually happened. My guess is that he was just asked to leave and left. First offenses in Japan, especially small ones, don't tend to come with jail time or any sort of actual real punishment. They defer a lot of stuff and say like, look, if you do this again, you're going to get in trouble. But if you're a tourist, they're like, look, just go and don't come back. But if they want to make sure he doesn't come back, they charge him with the crime, they find him guilty, and then they send him away. Then he can't come back into the country. A record scam occurred. Someone took 809 million yen, that's $5 million, in one scam. What do you call it? In one scam. It's not one scam event, one scam session, one scam something. I want another word in there, but I don't think there is. I think it's just in one scam. My brain was going for another word to make it like the event. Because it wasn't a single instance. The scam happened multiple times. He got money multiple times from the person. So what would you call that? It's like it's a sequence. Oh, I have to look and see if there's got to be some correct verbiage for that. But anyways, a Chinese national was arrested for fraud because of an investment scheme via LINE. He impersonated a famous economic analyst. So he basically put up ads saying, I'm this famous economics guy in Japan. It's an ad saying like, if you want information from me, you can pay money. We can do some stuff. I'll make you super rich if you give me your money. Excellent. So the appeal of this scam, I think, is that they don't go out hunting for you. So they're not looking for marks. They let the marks come to them. And then that gives the person a lot more confidence when they start actually talking about the money and stuff. This is one of the more effective versions of scams, is when you get the people to come to you to give you money, because they're already partially convinced of your thing's legitimacy if they show up at your door. This is not showing up at anyone's door. This is all via the internet. A 71-year-old woman responded to an online ad and added the LINE account. So LINE is a chat kind of thing in Japan. It's one of the biggest ones in Japan. So she sees an ad and it says, add this LINE account and we can talk about your investment future, something like that. She adds the LINE account and starts chatting with this person who she thinks is a famous economic analyst. Initially, she gave 10 million yen in November, and the scammers faked profits via an app. So they made an app. And then they put her number in and they made it look like that number was going up so she would invest further. She looked like she was making money. Over the course of the time, she made 47 more transactions. Many were cash couriers. So she's basically was like, meet me at this train station. I will give you cash. They dropped the cash off. One cash drop was 83 million yen. I don't have any money. I'm not a rich person. I don't have any money. I have enough money to survive. I'm not in any trouble or anything. This woman had 809 million yen to play with, to use for investments. She was capable of dropping 83 million yen at one time and not really seeming to have a significant impact on her life. Whereas if you just handed me 83 million yen today, my life would be completely altered. It's almost like these rich people who've, I don't know anything about the lady. They don't release a lot of details about the victim in this case, which is probably correct. But you can assume with the sheer volume of money she was funneling into this thing, she either is president of a company or was president of a company, or this is like generational wealth. But she had a lot of money that she could just play with in her personal life. It's almost like these super rich people who clearly are comfortable with super rich amounts of money, super large amounts of money, don't know how to use that money. Because if she just took 83 million yen or 809 million yen and redistributed amongst poor people like me, again, I don't want to make it sound like I'm poor, but I'm not rich, it would have this huge positive impact on my life, and she's just throwing it away. This scammer just took her. So after a certain amount of money, 809 million yen, $5 million later, she started to realize maybe something was up because she wasn't getting her money back. I don't know. I feel weirdly frustrated for myself because I don't have any money to invest in anything. But then I could get scammed too. I would do that because I would go out hunting for something to look at that would, you know, promise me a certain amount of return on my investment. And then I would invest it, and then you find out you're getting scammed, but they always get you to roll in more. But there's an app that they say to look at, and the app's telling you you're making more money, and you believe it because you want to believe you're making more money. I got a lot of sympathy. Even though this is a rich person who clearly had more money than sense, I do have sympathy because they don't deserve to be scammed. I just would like them to use their money in a more sensible way, as in bankrolling Ninja News Japan's next 333 episodes. An 88-year-old father, chef, and a 60-year-old manager, who is the son of the same restaurant, got into a fight. The father threatened the son with a knife, so the son hit the father with a frying pan. I don't know why, but that was enough for me to be into this story. Like, that was a cliche fight. Like, he whips out a knife, he starts threatening him. The other guy picks up a pan. I have to make the sound. Bong. They were both arrested. The father said, "There is no mistake that I threatened him by holding a knife up to him." The son said, "It's true, I hit him with a frying pan." So they've both admitted to their crimes. Both were taken into custody, and then both were later released. So I'm trying to figure out what happened, because I guess the police were like, "Do you want to press charges on each other?" Because both have admitted to the crime they committed. Like, you're not supposed to threaten people with knives. You're not supposed to hit people with frying pans. But maybe they didn't want to press charges against each other because it's father and son. And maybe they have like this kind of contentious relationship and this is how they just live their lives. There's a weird thing about chefs, and the chefs are all tough and violent and stuff. And I've never seen chefs as being that kind of personality. I think it's like a persona they've put on themselves, which is how you get the Gordon Ramsays who like shouts and is really mean to everybody. I don't think that's a good way to run anything. But I've never run a successful kitchen, so what do I know? But then there's an interesting thing where police can send it to prosecutors, and the prosecutors can choose to press charges even though like the victim doesn't want to do that. Like, they can actually do it on your behalf because the crime has been committed whether or not you're angry about it. But Japan being Japan, since they're not going to get help from the other person, like the son's not going to like turn on the father's not going to turn on the son, you're in this like weird situation where they're not going to actually go after each other when you actually get to court. And that's actually what the prosecution needs, I think. Japan has very famously a high, if you go to prosecution, you're guilty. It's 98%, 99%. It's a massive number. But it's because if they're not 100% sure they're going to get that, they cut you loose. So I'm betting that's what's actually happened. Because they weren't going to get the two to turn on each other, like, we're not 100% sure this is actually going to work out, we're going to cut them loose so that our record doesn't go down. A small city has proposed a tourist event. It's a very good thing to do. You have to have lots of events for tourists. You have to have tourism. Tourism is a big moneymaker in Japan. So they have a meeting. They're like, "Hey guys, we want to make an event. We want to have a creative idea." Then we have a lady over here, and she's like, "I have an idea. Let's make a competition where people pretend to kill themselves and then act it out." The idea came from someone who sold and demonstrated toy retractable plastic swords. So it was a little sword, and you push it into your body, and it retracts into the hilt of the sword. Okay, so no one's actually getting hurt. You've seen those like stage knives and kind of that stuff in the past. So what they're like, we're going to, every city has a samurai tradition. I mean, it's one of those things where they do like, ooh, samurais came from here. Samurais came from everywhere. That's not a big deal. So like, but samurais had to commit seppuku. They had to kill themselves. It's a very dramatic thing. They have to like run it across their stomach. They have to die dramatically. We've seen it in movies and that stuff. Let's have that competition. And this went forward and everyone thought it was a good idea. So the posters go up and it said, seeking participants, seppuku contest. We are seeking participants for a seppuku contest to be held at the Dandan Terrace at Matsue City Hall on December 14th, a Saturday. After committing seppuku with a plastic sword, please demonstrate your acting skills by writhing around for 30 seconds to 1 minute. So there's like a time frame of when you have to die, which is pretty interesting. The person with the most vivid performance will be named champion. The use of fake blood is prohibited. Now that, quite sensibly, turned out to be not the best idea. So the city's like, hey, no, you're not going to do that. So then they had to do a retraction. It was canceled. I would like to apologize to the involved party at City Hall for causing such a disturbance from something we intended to serve as entertainment. On the other hand, we have also received emails from people saying they approve of the idea and want to participate, but we feel that holding it could contribute to a loss of trust from City Hall, so we are canceling the contest. So basically, yeah, some people were like, hey, I want to show my acting chops. I want to fake kill myself on stage. I want to get everyone to look at me while I die for 30 seconds to a minute. It's going to be a great show. Other people are like, hey, take a second and think what you're actually doing. You're pretending to kill yourself on stage in front of a whole bunch of people. Maybe that's not the best idea. Maybe that doesn't really represent our city well. Maybe that doesn't represent City Hall well. Maybe that's not something we should be doing. A drunk passenger sleeps on the subway car for 5 hours overnight. So what happened is, this is a pretty normal thing. People get the last train. They've been drinking. They're really drunk when they get on the train. If you've ever taken the last train home from wherever you are in Japan to your home station, you have encountered the extremely drunk person. They fall asleep on the benches. They take up too much space. Maybe they fall on the floor. The interesting thing is when the like cell phone or wallet falls out of them, like people will pick them up and put them on the bench next to them so that they don't lose it. It's one of those nice things about Japan where it's like a relatively honest place where they don't tend to steal from you when you're drunk out of your gourd, which is what a lot of people are. The interesting thing is what happens when you get to the last station. So the staff have to wake you up and get you off the train. You're not allowed to stay there. Since it's the last train, you can't get home. There's a whole other set of issues that you have to deal with as the person who just got kicked off the train. You missed your stop. Can you walk home? Sometimes possible, sometimes not. You probably get a hotel around the station or something like that. Karaoke box, something like that. Who knows? That's your problem. What happened here is the guys on the end car, the staff come in, they wake him up. They're like, you got to get off here. It's the last station. So he's drunk. He gets up, he walks off. The station staff person goes to the next car to see if there's anyone else on those cars and starts moving up the train. Then they turn off the lights. What happened is the drunk guy walked off the train. The station staff walked away. He's like, I'm too tired to walk to the ticket gate and go out the station. I'm going to go back in and lie down where I was very comfortable 10 seconds ago. He gets back on the train and falls asleep 5 hours later, because the first train's like 6 o'clock in the morning, 5:30 in the morning, something like that. 5 hours later, staff come and find him asleep on the train. The driver of the first train of the day found the man asleep inside the train at 5:20 a.m. He was said to be intoxicated. So this is a guy who at 12:30, 1 o'clock, whenever that last train was drunk out of his mind. 4 hours, 5 hours later of sleep, and he was still drunk out of his mind when they tried to wake him up in the next morning. So should you come visit Japan, don't commit vandalism. This is again when I have to switch to the camera where I speak to the criminals in the audience. If you're going to commit vandalism, don't write your name. That's just going to be straight up advice from Ninja News Japan to you. Don't use your own name in your crimes. That's what aliases are for. But if you come to Japan, don't commit vandalism. And if you do get super, super drunk, know that if you fall asleep on the last train, they will kick you off. And if you fall asleep, I don't know if it's a crime. I guess it's trespassing. So he doesn't seem like he's actually been arrested or gotten in trouble. But it is a good thing to know that if you're on the last train, they will kick you off.